is up. It is me, George G. Got another awesome episode of the Aligned Money Show coming your way featuring Adam Koch. Adam is a CFP, a CMT, and a CEPA. He is president and founder of Libertas Wealth Management. He is a podcaster, a thoughtful guy. We had an awesome conversation that started out with two truths and a lie. Then we moved on to talking about what's going to happen to the stock market in between now and the election time. We talked about different approaches to managing money and which is more beneficial or preferential to both the advisor and the client. We talked about thinking about risk and recency bias and all the different factors aside from the technical stuff that people go through when we're trying to put together a financial plan. And finally, a great difference-making tip on the realities of making financial plans. I know you're going to love it. Let's go. Adam, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please.
Two truths and a lie. All right, here we go. I got to make sure that I don't. Is there like some kind of system you've used to figure out the lie, by the way? Do you have some kind of secret?
No, uh-uh.
All right, two truths and a lie. Okay. I am a black belt in Taekwondo. I once ran a marathon in under 3 hours. And I was signed to a record deal for singing.
Well, these are excellent. A black belt in Taekwondo, you ran a marathon, sub 3 hours, and you got signed to a record deal for singing. Wow. Holy cow. You do have a very nice voice, Adam, so I can see that. I'm going to say you've not run a marathon in sub 3 hours.
You are correct. Yes. I tried it, but I'll never do it again. Yeah.
Tell me about the singing.
Oh, wow. I didn't think you'd ask me that. I used to sing like a lot of us do in the privacy of our car, in the shower, in the basement, totally. You know, and I had a friend in college who, or roommate technically, who was already signed to a record deal. And he was on an album, you know, already kind of had his, it was starting his fame, I guess you could call it. And I would cut my own hair in the basement, and I'd always be singing down there. And he heard me one day, and he's like, you know, you're really good. He says, you actually sound better than the guy, you know, singing. I'm like, come on, you know, you gotta be kidding me. And of course, you know, singing in public was tough. So to make a long story short, he convinced me to start going to these karaoke competitions at this place. And I started winning first place all the time, which was like a $250 prize some days, $500.
Amazing.
I was making college money, you know?
Yeah.
So, and one day at this competition, this guy walks up to my table and he says, hey, I'm an artist. I sing, and my producer over here at our table would like to meet you. And so I went over to the table and he says, have you ever thought about singing professionally? I said, no, but yes, but no. And, they asked me to audition, and I did. And then they signed me. Trying to make this short, but went to Chicago after a compilation was recorded. The producer, it was set up as a limited partnership. The producer stole my car in the middle of the night. Yep. Right as you're about to pick up a drink. Yep. Stole my car in the middle of the night. Sold all my stuff in it for drugs. And I had to fly back to Columbus the next day with a one-way ticket so I could get home in time for class the next day. Needless to say, the whole record label went under, and they were really close to a label deal with Interscope. So that was really exciting. And then that was it. It was all over with, and it was fun. So the bad news is it was a terrible story. The good news is, I fell in love with the art of producing music. And, that's kind of what I think I love the most. And so you can't see it here, but I've got, well, maybe the keyboard here. I've got a DJ deck, but I also DJ kind of as a second life. And then I've got, recording studio here in front of me. And, as much as I wish I had more time for it, I still love making music. It's a lot of fun.
Well, that's awesome. Not the part about you getting ripped off, but the rest of it was cool.
His girlfriend was nice enough to meet us in Indianapolis 2 weeks later once they found my car. And my wife and I, our girlfriend at the time, drove there together and drove him back. And so I was able to get my car back, even though I had no radio in it. You know, there wasn't much left, but it ran.
Back in the day when people would steal the radio, the stereo out of cars.
Oh, man. Remember going to the mall and you'd see people carrying their pull-out radios with them.
For sure. Yeah. I remember that. Do you remember what the song was that you nailed, or did you have a go-to song?
Yeah. Dude, it was, I know it was an Eric Benet song. So I was more, I was raised listening to R&B, primarily R&B and hip hop, but it was an Eric, I think it was Let's Stay Together by Eric Benet. If I remember correctly. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I'm not going to sing it.
No, I was, I like to put people on the spot, but maybe not quite that far. So
listen, that'd be pretty hardcore.
And do you still practice Taekwondo?
No, that was a long time ago. I competed in college at Ohio State, and that was a lot of fun. It kept me really kind of on the straight and narrow, kept me focused, you know, didn't drink at all in college, but not, not anymore. It's that's a prior life. I actually tried to get back into it with my kids because the 14 and 11 year old kids are both into it, but I learned the hard way that this body isn't what it used to be.
Yeah. It's a frustrating thing, but all too often a reality. So, well, excellent. Well, you are a man with many varied interests, and I respect and appreciate that. What is top of mind for you right now?
Top of mind for me right now with what's going on in our business, the world of money management, financial planning, retirement planning is definitely the election. So, you know, we're entering literally today, we're entering into a 2-month period that is seasonally not a good time for the stock market. You know, the market has a tendency to decline between September and October up until the election or shortly beforehand. And because the market doesn't like uncertainty. So, you know, when stocks don't know what's going on, who's going to win the election, they kind of freak out. However, contrary to popular belief, the market really doesn't care a whole lot about who wins. They just want certainty at the end of the day. So I'm not going to be boring and not be divisive here at all. But it is, I think it is important to make sure that people understand that it's not about who wins. It's about that somebody wins. And I think the guarantee is somebody's going to win. So that's I'd say the top of mind. That's where we get some questions about these days. New clients coming on board, you know, wanting to hold off until they invest their money. Maybe so some of their money until after the election, things like that.
Which is a very, very human thing. Say, you know what, I'm going to wait until this blows over or conditions are right. So what do you typically say when somebody says that? Obviously,
I'll give you a real life example. We just had somebody recently who, said, you know, hey, are you flexible? Like, how do you invest the money when we transfer our money over to you? I said, well, you know, for a portfolio your size, and it's a large portfolio, I'd say we typically go in, you know, in fourths or 20% for 5 weeks, you know, basically trying to catch the market on a bad day. So kind of baby step into the portfolio model that we've decided on, or, and which is usually a combination of two or three models. And, then he said, well, are you flexible on that? And I said, well, what do you mean? And he says, well, you know, if you wanted to, would you be okay with, say, if we did half of it between now and the next 4 weeks, but then we waited for the other half until after the election, let's just say. And he says, do you, and my favorite part of it, he says, do you think that's a good idea? Cause that's such a great tee off, right? Cause teeing me up to ask the right question or say the right thing. He said, do you think that's a good idea? And my answer was, I we'll find out after the election day. Cause I have no idea. So I said, you know, we're either A, we do it and we find out, you know, in December that, man, I'm so glad we put half away before and half after because it worked out for us. Or we're going to say, oh man, I wish we would have put it all away in that first 4 or 5 weeks because we would have been so much better off. And of course the problem is we'll have no idea till we get there. So, I think when you're honest and transparent and forthright like that, and, you know, you're kind of having that conversation with somebody and you both realize, look, I'm not a magician either. I'm the Wizard of Oz. I don't have any, you know, strings I can pull here as much as I wish I did, but I don't. I've got a crystal ball on my conference table that was a joke gift from a client. And I always point at it and like, it doesn't work. I wish it did, but it doesn't work. But so that's a good example of how I deal with stuff like that is just, you know, being honest, talking about the truths that are, you know, the market, and that the market doesn't care what we think.
It does not care what we think at all, which is pretty cold hearted of the market, but that's just part of the deal. You are one of relatively few people that have, is it certified market technician? Is that the designation?
Yep. Chartered market technician. I always say it's not country music television, but yeah.
So you are a chartered market technician, and which means obviously that you have a better understanding, a better working knowledge of markets than most people. I think that that's probably fair to say. I'll let you answer that in a second, but then you look at the scenario and says, we just don't know what's going to happen. We know that the market doesn't like certainty. So just want to get your take on that. And then maybe a greater conversation about what your philosophy to just, I guess, in just investing in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that, I guess I'm probably going to answer both at once here, but I think that when we look at the market, I don't want to say that I feel like I know the market more than most people. I don't even like saying stuff like that about myself, but I would say that I got to where I'm at and got the CMT designation because I started my career 10 days before the World Trade Center went down. I was 21 years old. I was trying to get people three times my age to trust me with their life savings at a time when the market was falling precipitously, which was not easy. It kind of probably goes without saying. And then when things got better between 2000, you know, three, four, five, six, I'm thinking, okay, finally, you know, getting some portfolios in the black, people are happy. Then in 07, of course, market peaks in 07, October, and it starts going down again. And to make a long story short, I'm like, you know, I've got to, in summer of 2008, I said, either A, I'm going to sell this company and do something else for a living, because I just can't take sitting here and blaming the market or blaming mutual funds for why things are going wrong. And then, you know, pretend like I have no feelings about it. You know what I mean? When I did, honestly. So it's either sell the company or do things differently. And that's when I started learning technical analysis, seeking out mentors, going to the CMT program, things like that. So really, you know, at our office, we manage both your traditional buy and hold strategic models for the people that make sense. And then we also manage tactical trend following models for those that make sense. And usually the clients have a combination of the both. And the reason for that is because as much as trend following sounds like market timing, it's not trend prediction, it's trend following. You're still following the trend at the end of the day. So you really don't know how things are going to end up, you know, until after it's all over with. So I always use the analogy that market crashes or warnings of market crashes are a lot like tornado sirens. And I don't know about, you know, Phoenix, Arizona, where you live, but here in Columbus, Ohio, you know, you get lots of tornado sirens and there's never a tornado. I mean, just rarely, you know, but obviously different around the world. But when you look at the stock market and you carry the analogy forward, every seven or so tornado sirens, you get a tornado that comes in and wipes out your portfolio. Not completely, but you know, whether that's the average is 42%. So you get a 42% reduction if you're in all stocks. So technical analysis is great to have on your side, and trend following is great to have on your side with either all or portion of your money, as long as you understand that there's going to be times when you, again, to keep the analogy going here, you take your family to the basement when the tornado sirens go off. And then when the sirens stop, you come upstairs and you realize there was never a tornado, and your neighbor across the street's going, "Hey, did you see that touchdown?" You're like, "Well, no, I was in the basement with my family." "You didn't go to the basement?" It's like, "Oh, I never go to the basement. There's never tornadoes. You know, you guys are idiots." And you're going to feel like an idiot when you implement money management and retirement planning that way, which is why you want to do it both ways, because it's not until it's all over with. COVID is a perfect example. You know, when the COVID crash happened, market goes down 34% in 21 days. Then it goes up 34%, 29 days later. I mean, that's what you call a whipsaw from hell. And there's no trend following portfolio that's going to do well. Well, I shouldn't say there's no trend. Very, very few trend following portfolios are going to do well in an environment like that. In other words, it's going to be very difficult to not sell low and buy high. In other words, you have to trade up to get back in the market. Whereas we're all stuck at home, you know, during COVID, the market, I mean, businesses aren't even open yet, and the market's up 34% off the bottom, and everybody's looking at each other going, "What in the world is going on?" But I sure am glad I stayed in the market with a part of my money. So that's why I always say it's good to have some of both. I think whether that's 50-50, 75-25, one third, two thirds, or vice versa. So philosophically, I would say that I believe that there are better ways to manage money and better ways to manage your retirement planning than just simply diversifying, or as I like to call it, diversifying, and just throwing your money into a bunch of stuff and hoping it goes up and praying when it goes down, you know.
I appreciate that. That sort of answers my next question I have is, you're obviously employing buy and hold and then this tactical approach, which is harder for you as an advisor, if tactical. One is harder
trend
than the other.
For sure. Yeah. Strategic models are, I don't want to say easy, but they're simple and they're easier. Not to say that tactical trend following models are not, you know, simple. They're also simple. It's just you have the rules put in place and you follow the rules. And if you don't follow the rules, then you have no rules, right? It's kind of like if you have more than three priorities, you don't have any priorities. So, you know, when it comes to, but even our buy and hold models, we still implement something called relative strength as a basis for all security selection. So when we're deciding what investments to buy, I like to use the analogy that instead of just, you know, using hockey, I know we're talking about hockey off air. So as opposed to, you know, putting a little bit of money into every team in the NHL, And kind of diversifying it, you know, maybe a little less money in the Columbus Blue Jackets, for instance, for obvious reasons. No, I'm kidding. But a little less money in certain teams. Maybe, you know, people don't like owning commodities. I always say that's like the jalapenos of a dish. You add jalapenos, everybody freaks out. But if you, as opposed to having a little bit of money in every team in the NHL, what we're doing is we're focusing on the playoff teams. So we invest our money in the playoff teams. We're going to own the Stanley Cup winner, but we're not putting all our money on the Stanley Cup winner because we might lose completely. So, but if we own all the playoff teams, we're diversified in those playoff teams and we avoid the rest, which is very simple to do. It's not easy, but it's simple. Then what we end up with is a very, very good portfolio that, you know, are we going to hit, are we going to have a win rate of 100%? No. Is it going to be right around 70, 74? Yeah. And is there anything wrong with 74? Absolutely not.
That's a great, way to describe it. I think that makes sense. And is that how you describe it to clients?
I do. Yeah. We have several analogies we use because I think that's the easiest way to explain something that's very complex and technical is to make it, you know, real life. But we've used March Madness, the NFL, college football playoffs, everything, you know, so it depends on the season.
Yeah, for sure. And just because something is harder to implement, that doesn't mean it's easy to describe. And I mean, as you look at your practice and the business of investment management, obviously you need to do a good job with how you're managing money, but then you have to do a good job with how you're managing your clients.
Yep. Yeah. And I think that the latter is more difficult because you're dealing, as you put it earlier, you said, you know, this stuff's not easy. It's money is very emotional. It's a very emotional thing. And we can have the same conversation during, you know, the market pullback that occurred between July and Halloween of last year, which was a, I don't want to call it nasty, but it was a grinding correction, market correction. We had the same kind of correction happen between July 15th and the beginning of August. And people were calling for an emergency Fed meeting, you know, to have Jay Powell come out and cut rates immediately. Now, here we are. We're almost at market all-time highs again. So it's amazing how recency bias plays in to the markets and retirement planning. And I always say that the number one reason why clients' financial plans and retirement plans fail is because the client abandons their plan. And the number one reason they abandon their plan is because they haven't put together the right portfolio. That is, think of it like an analogy, like a car. You know, not everybody wants to be driving, you know, a brand new Corvette across the country. You're going to get beat up, you know, and some people would though, maybe, but not very many. That's where the Gaussian bell curve gets really thin at the tails there. But I think most people are somewhere in the middle, you know, moderate growth, balanced. They want something that's going to get them from countryside to countryside, through all the weather, through the traffic in a way that's comfortable. And I think that clients abandon their plans because they're in the wrong portfolio. And it all comes down to downside risk because nobody cares if they're making more money than they thought they would, right? It's if they're losing more than they thought they would, that becomes a problem.
It makes so much sense. Why did I not reach my objectives? It's because too many starts and stops. I abandoned the plan. I moved advisors. I, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And it, a lot of it is that recency bias. I don't remember what happened, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago, especially with what's going on in the world today and the frequency of news and events. So I guess I don't blame clients.
No, for sure. I don't either. It's you know, it used to be that you'd have to wait till you got the paper in the afternoon when you got home to read the news. Mm. Now it's on your phone. You know, it's on the radio. It's everywhere.
Constant. And while your crystal ball, did it ever work, Adam, or is just you got a faulty model?
I got a lemon, and I mean, it's terrible. It's I got a lemon of a crystal ball, and the only time it's ever worked, it's been a placebo effect. I got lucky. And there's nothing wrong with a little luck, by the way. You know, got lucky a couple of times, but give the credit to the crystal ball. That way, you don't end up with a God complex, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Beyond, let's assume that the election is settled and we have a president of the United States come midway through November. Are you confident about the future of the economy? Are you unsure? Does nobody know?
I'm confident about it. I mean, I think I have my concerns. Like I think we have way too much debt. And I think the amount of debt we have as a percentage of what we make in this country is way too high. I think that, we've got to figure out a way to either pay the debt off, write it down, or inflate our way out of it. I'm looking at usdebtclock.org right now, and our debt right now is 123.22% of our annual GDP, which essentially means that if it were a family making $100,000 a year as a family, that their credit card debt minimums are equivalent to 122% of their annual income. So in other words, they're paying minimums of $122,000 a year on their credit cards, not paying off the balance, just paying the minimums. And so the difference is the government's not a family. So I'm sure that I'll get shade for that. But so the government is not a family, but I have some concerns about debt. I'm obviously, you know, proud American. I want to the U.S. dollar to remain the reserve world, you know, world's reserve currency, even if we are the cleanest dirty laundry, you know, I want it to stay that way. But I don't think it really matters a whole lot. And it won't for, I think, several election cycles who wins this presidency. I think at the end of the day that the American economy will prevail as it always does.
Amen. Well, Adam, we're ready for your difference-making tip. What do you have for us, sir?
Sure. Yeah. I think that if I had one tip for every single person that's listening to this episode, it would be to not be one of the very, very large percentage or majority of people who don't have a financial plan. I know it sounds so boring and simple, but really at the end of the day, the average person puts together their first financial plan at 52 years of age, which is really, really sad. When you look at the statistics in terms of how much money is in the average 401k, if there's a balance at all, that's really sad. So the state of retirement readiness in this country is embarrassing. And it's partly our job to fix that problem. So, you know, my why, you know, Simon Sinek, my why is, you know, I want to save people, you know, from bad advice, bad direction, and protect those people and get them on the right path. And so if there's one thing you can do for yourself, it's find somebody that, whether it's in your neighborhood, online, it doesn't make a difference, build a financial plan. Don't be intimidated. I think the reason people don't do it is they feel stupid. They feel like they don't know what to ask. They feel like they're behind. And that's just a constant self-perpetuating cycle of, I don't feel like I'm ready, so I'm going to wait. And then you still don't feel like you're ready, so you wait longer. And then it just keeps feeding itself. And then if you're ever curious on who to hire, because there's no shortage of financial advisors out there, that's for sure. My recommendation is always to go to NAPFA.org. It's the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. And if you go to NAPFA.org and you put in your zip code, it'll give you a list of all the fee-only fiduciaries who have a whole lot fewer conflicts of interest than a lot of the advisory firms out there. So that would be, I think, a good place to start. And I believe that you've probably done 90% of the research at that point. All you need to do is find the right person that you want to get along with. That's going to, you know, be your Obi-Wan, because at the end of the day, you're Luke Skywalker, you know, so it's being the Obi-Wan, the guide that's going to get you from here to there, being, you know, there being obviously retirement and beyond.
Well, I think that is great stuff that definitely gets, come on. Hey. People make their first plan at 52 years old. I didn't know that, but it doesn't surprise me, Adam.
It's crazy.
That, man. It is. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can people engage with you?
No, thank you, George. And the best place to probably find me is on LinkedIn. Just look up my name, Adam Koch, K-O-O-S at LinkedIn, or just head over to our website, libertaswealth.com, LibertasWealth, libertaswealth.com.
Podcasts?
Yeah, we do have a podcast called The Retirement Fiduciary for the non-business owners out there and for people who are business owners looking to grow, de-risk, become more efficient, increase profits, net worth, and maybe ride off into the sunset someday, elevate your business on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Both The Retirement Fiduciary and Elevate Your Business are both online.
Excellent.
Thanks for mentioning it.
For sure. Well, if you enjoyed this much as I did, show Adam your appreciation. Share today's episode with somebody who also appreciates good ideas. Find Adam on LinkedIn. I'll certainly link that in the notes of the show. Go to libertaswealth.com. Check out everything that Adam is working on, what he's been talking about today, and then listen to his podcasts, The Retirement Fiduciary, as well as Elevate Your Business. And we will link those as well. Thanks again, Adam.
Thank you, George.
Finally, friendly reminder. Never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.